You're listening to a download from theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Number 495.
Hello and welcome back to The Outdoor Station, the UK's longest running podcast for the self-powered traveller. I'm Bob Cartwright, your host, and if you've been listening to past podcasts, and I do hope you have, you will have heard my little promo to sign up for our newsletter every now and then. Well, thankfully, a recent listener, Marguerite, informed me that the subscribe button was in fact missing from the newsletter. Horror shock probe. Well, this has now been rectified, so please do pop back and add your name to the list so we can keep in touch. And thanks once again, Marguerite. Another helpful person this week has been Liv Bolton from the Outdoors Fix podcast, who will be on next week's show, all being well. And thanks to her, you can now find us on more places than you can point a walking pole at. And that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, RSS Feed, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Plus, this means that if you have one of those clever little Amazon Echo or Alexa gizmos, you can tap into any podcast. It's all getting a little bit geeky around here. And talking of geeks, this is probably rather appropriate given the nature of this podcast, which is our annual geeky review of the European Outdoor Trade Fair, which took place at ISPO in Munich a couple of months ago. So if you're not a gear geek, stop listening right now, as Roman Ackle and I discuss key products from certain brands which have a leaning towards going lightweight. The audio is an edited extract from a much longer video, which is now available on our YouTube channel and on our website. So if you want to see pictures and video relating to the products we discussed taken at the show, grab a coffee and sit back and watch it on your smart TV on the big screen or any other viewing device. So folks, sit back and here come the geeks. Hello and good evening and welcome to The Outdoor Station. And tonight we're chatting with our European correspondent Roman Ackle, based over in Munich, following his visit to the Summer Outdoor Trade Fair at ISPO. Roman has always been very keen to check out any of the new inspiring products, or in particular lightweight hiking products, but products in general that may be of interest to all outdoors people. So we're going to join Roman to find out exactly what impression the fair left on him this year.
Hi, good evening, Bob.
So you had an interesting experience this year, obviously visiting ISPO for the first time for the Outdoors Fair. What was your actual impression of it?
Well, quite a lot changed, but a lot of the things also stayed the same. I mean, you know, ISPO obviously is in Munich, and you know, which is quite a difference to the fair, which previously took fair for 25 years at Friedrichshafen. So there was a lot of uncertainty last year in Friedrichshafen, and you know, people were looking forward to how it's like in Munich. So if you look at the general setup of the halls, you know, that kind of remains the same. You have you know, the Scandinavian village and different areas for footwear and for tents and so on. That is very similar. But within the halls, you know, a lot of that moved inside, which was outside in Friedrichshafen. So they had an indoor pool where they did some stuff, you know, showing activities. They also had a beer garden. Of course, you need to have that if you are in Munich, where people could eat and drink. And then they had food trucks in the halls, where you could eat and grab some snacks. Also, you know, in each and every hall there were some shows where they showed fashion. One of the differences was, you know, you see here one of the booths from Mammut, which had a gigantic booth in Friedrichshafen. The booths were much smaller in Munich, also for the big brands. So that is a change compared to there. And of course, you know, those booths are, I imagine, much more expensive than they were in Friedrichshafen as well, which would explain it. Sustainability remains a subject in terms of content. We have seen that since a lot of shows, and it continues to be a subject. Interestingly, in the previous years, lightweight was always on the forefront, and obviously my main aim was to go there, look around and see, you know, what I could find in terms of lightweight equipment. It seems to be that at least for the majority of the major brands, you know, they are continue to use lightweight raw materials. So it's more of ingrained in their current collection, and it's not so much a differentiator anymore for them, it seems to be. Yeah. I think that kind of wraps it up.
Okay, I mean that's fairly interesting. So really, they're continuing their following the lightweight as an approach to things, but it's veering off and going much more on the sustainability side now, which is obviously the natural and way to progress things. Certainly, mm-hmm. Obviously, you want to talk about the big three. So, what were your major impressions, and what sort of caught your eye?
Well, I think the first one which caught my eye was the new Anaris tent from Hilleberg. First tent from Hilleberg that sets up with trekking poles. They haven't had that before. It's a two-person tent, you know, 1.4 kilograms pack weight. It's in a classic A-frame construction, so really back to the roots. I found it interesting, you know, that after a lot of years where they only produced Bombor expedition-like type of tents, you know, in the previous years they kind of embrace the more lightweight ethos, and this is a new tent which will come out in April, May next year, which is another one along the same theme, I would say.
And what sort of money were we talking about? Did you get any prices for these products as you were going through them?
they're kind of a bit tight-lipped in terms of the prices. They said they're not finally decided yet. But, you know, Hilleberg is a top-notch manufacturer, top quality, so it would surely be on the upper end of the price scale. Yeah. But, you know, it's as you see here, it's a solid double wall tent, even though it's set up with trekking poles. And, you know, with two people, you have still some space inside for some gear. And they label it a three-person tent, but honestly, knowing Hilleberg, I would also not be afraid to use it in autumn or late spring.
Moving on, I see we've also got some new seamless or unsewn seams from Vaude, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. They came up with a new tent. It's called the Lizard Seamless. Shown here is a two to three person tent. They also release a 1 to 2 person tent. As you see, you know, this is kind of a more of an Ecto style, a Hilleberg Ecto style tent in terms of the construction. So a well proven design. What is interesting here is, beside, you know, that is very sustainable in terms of the raw materials Faudi is really kind of leading. The seams are not sawn anymore and taped. They're actually welded. So it's going to be interesting, you know, if that really withstands the day-to-day usage. Another one which caught my eyes actually was, it's not a new tent, but the one I could, you know, really see in the flesh on the show. It's from Big Agnes. It's a Tiger Wall Carbon. So they used a fly sheet made out of DCF, Dyneema composite fabrics, formerly known as Cuban fiber. And Andrew Skirka, a very well-known and long-distance hiker, tested that tent, and he said, well, you know, this is one where probably lightweight goes to the extreme, because they have used a too light material from DCF, you know, it ripped off after 10 usages at one of the packing points. So he does not really recommend. And if you look at it, you know, even though I really like to go lightweight, I would not probably buy such a tent. especially, you know, it also costs beyond $800 for one tent.
I was going to say what the sort of prices we're talking about. It must be astronomic, I would think, with that material.
Yeah, it is. And as I said, it's probably not durable enough. I think they need to go and just choose a different type of DCF fabric. Then it can work, but this is too light. Simple as that. Also, you know, what I looked at in terms of sleeping, you know, Semarest released a new classic sleeping bag, the Hyperion. Last year, they released a few quilts. Also, you know, relatively lightweight. It goes to a maximum temperature of -6 and weighs 577 grams. You know, it doesn't have a full length zipper. Only quarter length, but you know, I would say it's a very solid choice if you want to go lightweight and want to use a classic sleeping bag.
Also, I would have thought, that's quite going fairly retro, isn't it? That's going back a bit now to previous designs where it really was just a short zip, a basic bag, but obviously really good quality insulation that's inside it.
Exactly. So it goes a little bit back. And as I said, you know, last year they released two quilts. So it looks like they're kind of moving back also into the more traditional setup, but making it lightweight.
Okay.
What also changed in terms of some manufacturers, the warmth that a sleeping pad provides is measured in the rating
and the R value, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of companies said to some of the manufacturers who didn't use R value so far that they should jump on the bandwagon. They can redefine the measurement of R values a bit, so you can see that it increases a little bit for pads next season, which currently already provide R values. But, you know, now, as you see here, for example, Big Agnes, who never provided an R value, now provide, which makes it for the end consumer much easier to compare sleeping pads to each other with that value.
Yeah. Apples, comparing apples with apples, as we say in the UK.
Comparing apples with apples. And, you know, before that, some companies just said, you know, this is a three-season pad or whatever, which is not very useful, to be honest. The last item of the big three would be the backpacks. Honestly, nothing new release at the show. The Levity was new last year. Gregory released it, but you know, they concentrate now on their more traditional packs. And also the other manufacturers, you know, didn't release anything new in the lightweight area. So, you know, if you look at a lightweight pack from a major brand, I think, you know, the Gregory Levity the only one available. If you're not moving into the so-called cottage industry or very small companies making backpacks and other equipment, but this is obviously not the focus of the trade fair.
So from your impression, then there actually wasn't much in the way of new backpacks at all. Am I reading that correctly?
No, not well. You know, refinement of existing lines, but nothing really what you know made what I found interesting. No. Okay.
Well, let's move on to gear then. There's a few interesting toys, I think, in the gear section.
Yeah. Well, what you see here is probably not what you would imagine it could be in the first run. So this is a new burner, gas burner from Primus. You know, it's kind of cylindrical shape and it folds up like, you know, the three legs fold up to the sideways. It's an interesting new concept. You know, we will see if it really gives an advantage compared to the, let's say, more traditional gas burners, you know. It's a cylindrical shape. It's available in a titanium and stainless steel version. This titanium version weighs 89 grams, which is okay, I would say. Probably not super light for titanium. We will see, you know, if the pots really stand safe on those three legs or not.
So was it particularly packable? Was it a very packable sort of size?
It's impeccable in terms of, you know, this is kind of a tube shape once it's folded together. It's not as, you know, usually they're a little bit more bulky. It's long and like a tube. If you put the legs together.
So
and
is it
obviously, you know, waterproof.
So is it likely to fit inside a standard 750 or 900 pot?
750. Yes, maybe. You need to check it because obviously, you know, this is longer with the legs, you know, raising above the surface of the actual burner head and not kind of, you know, sticking out sideways, what you would normally see in a normal setup.
Yeah. I'm certainly looking at that closer. I mean, that the one thing it seems to be missing compared to most other stoves is any type of basic wind protection.
Well, you know, the burner head itself, as you see, is kind of hidden inside. So the outer ring is above the burner top itself. So you have, for example, the Soto Windmaster and a stove from Cascade Designs from MSR, which have a similar design. So that should be okay in terms of protection from the wind. You know, I'm more concerned about, as you said, the length overall and how will that fit in inside of the pots. And B, you know, if the surface area really is secure enough to hold your pot if you place it on a more uneven surface.
Sure. Okay. Interesting. Always good.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, beside cooking, you know, everybody, a lot of people actually, including myself, love to have a fresh coffee in the morning. The most lightweight solution is one of the instant coffees. But if you want to have a real fresh coffee, Rubitech released a grinder and a stainless steel filter. So the grinder only weighs 205 grams. The stainless steel filter weighs about 54 grams. Looks like a solid construction. So on the next outing, you can bring coffee beans and then use the grinder and the drip to prepare a very nice coffee.
I mean, yeah, seriously, Roman, would you do that for a long trip? Really?
Not for a long trip, but for, you know, not everybody does a super long trip, but for those overnighters where you want to bring some luxury items, it might be a good choice.
Okay.
It's all about the great outdoors.
Podcasting around the world. Online, on demand,
and always free.
I think it's a splendid idea.
This is the Outdoor Station.
I would just like to say, wow.
Footwear. The footwear looked interesting.
Footwear. I think 3 Arc'teryx entered the market with their own footwear line. Quite unique design back then. They kind of, you know, obviously continue. This is a new Norvan 2 or Norvan LD2 shoe that will release next year. You know, it comes in different colors, and you know, it's full mesh, so you don't have the Gore-Tex lining, and it's 520 grams per pair in a size 43, I think. So that should be a good, let's say, trail shoe if you don't do a lot of rock scrambling or wet grass, because the profile is obviously there. You could see that. But, you know, it's not super thick, you know, super thick lugs.
So I was going to say, what's the grip like on the bottom? Because it's got vibrant soles, which are obviously good quality soles, but it didn't look to be particularly aggressive.
No, not aggressive enough, I would say. It's more like, you know, for trails, you know, gravel. But, you know, if you encounter, let's say, wet grass or something like that, I'm not sure if it would be sticky enough, to be honest.
Okay. But I see, obviously, there's something on the La Sportiva which took your eye.
Yeah, well, At least I've seen it the first time that, you know, they kind of borrowed from technology, which you usually see in cycling shoes. You know, that boa wheel, which tightens the laces, has an aggressive thread as well. You know, it's more aimed to trail running instead of hiking or walking. But, you know, it was super, super light, you know, 360 grams per pair. For trail running shoes, this is light, and you know, if you utilize a boa wheel, obviously, you know, you can grip your foot very tight. One other model from La Sportiva will be the new Jekyll, which will come out, and I think that will be the major competitor to the Lowpeak from Atlas. Very famous and very well used hiking shoe, trail running shoe in the US by long distance hikers. So,
it just broke up slightly as you were saying. It would be a good competitor to which model?
To the Lone Peak from Ultra Running, which is a very popular model amongst long distance hikers in the US. So I think they kind of made that a kind of a direct competitor. Obviously, you know, they already have trail running shoes, but this is a new one. It's a little bit lighter weight, 600 grams per pair. Looks more like a traditional sneaker, I would say. It also has a 7 millimeters drop, whereas the Ultra running shoes have a zero drop. So if you're more comfortable or more used to shoes with a slight drop, that might be a good alternative. Will be released also in April, May next year from La Sportiva.
Now, Fjällräven looked like they had a reasonable stand.
They did actually, and they even won a prize at the show for this specific trouser. It's called the Abisko Midsummer Pant, and it's very, well, to a certain extent, similar to the Montane Terra pants. I really like. Has a bit more more storage capacity, more pockets. Also the side vents that the Terra pants have. Thankfully, they have it in also different colors. You don't need to buy that light blue, which I don't find personally too appealing. But looks very great. You know, it's a one special brand or version of their G1000 material. It has a slight stretch in it, and it's a mixture of cotton and recycled polyester. So that might be an interesting pant, and as I said, you know, good competitor to the Terra pants from Montane.
Just a matter of interest, I've got a pair of Fjällräven trousers, and I have to say I'm not particularly super impressed with the cuts. They seem to put strangest panels in areas that I don't find particularly good. For mm-hmm. my particular use, and I'm looking at that particular picture. Is the panel at the backside? Is that a mesh panel or is that a solid material?
No, it's solid material.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah, they have a mesh panel on the side of the pants, and then you have a mesh behind it, and so you can ventilate the legs a little bit.
So are you a fan of Fjällräven? Do you think it's a? I mean, I've always found them to be quite heavy duty clothing for their environment, and certainly mm-hmm. they certainly seem to be taking the UK by storm at the moment. The Fjällräven seems to be everywhere, but I was mm-hmm. just curious to know if you're a fan of the brand.
As you say, you know, they have a heritage for, you know, quite durable, long-lasting, you know, the classic G1000, you know, it's a cotton which is waxed, and you can again apply the wax, you know, with an iron, and you know, very heavy duty, very not lightweight, but you know, they have come some ways in the previous year, so I would say I would definitely, let's say, try it on, and if the fit works, they could be a valuable choice. And, you know, like last year, for example, they also introduced a tight as a hiking pant, you know, which is looking quite unusual, but, you know, makes sense for some. So what I want to say is they're kind of moving away from their classical heritage, which continues to be, let's say, the majority of the program, but they invest into new items as well.
Sure. Now, I think this is Montaigne, am I correct?
Yep, correct. That's they call it the unisex podium. It's a pull-on and also a pant. Lightweight as well. Claims to be waterproof and breathable, of course. They have their own material. It's called Aqua Pro Light. And, you know, the pen itself comes in at 100 grams in size M.
Would you say that their wind shirt material has always been Pertex, of the various types of Pertex you can get? Do you get the feeling that these particular products are takeover from their traditional wind shirts and wind pants?
I would say yes, over the mid run, they could take it over, because that's, as I said, you know, this is their own material, they brand and label.
So equally breathable and wind resistant, obviously, as Pertex, because that's what everybody's going to compare it to.
Yeah, correct.
Right. Okay.
Equally, you know, I think it's 15,000 hydrostatic heat, so that should be pretty waterproof. But let's see, you know, there are a lot of brands and fabrics that claim to be waterproof and breathable, but we will see how it turns out in reality. Patagonia came up with something interesting. It's called the Elements. It's actually a series of garments aimed at trail runners as a core group, not so much the traditional hiking crowd, but I see there's some overlap. You know, you have here the Airshed Pro Pullover, you know, with super lightweight, breathable, wind resistance. You have some very comfortable shirts, the Storm Racer jacket, is interesting for the trailer. I'm not sure if everybody would like the features for hiking, because you have two zips on both sides which open up the jacket. Different market, but I think, you know, if you look at it from a hiking perspective, I like the shorts, I like the pants, and also I would want to try the Airshed pullover. You know, it's meant for activities on the move. Obviously, you know, it's not meant for sitting around at the hut, but it could work double duty from my personal point of view, you know, for hiking and for trail running. But it's specifically designed for trail running in mind.
Okay, excellent.
And then, yeah, the umbrella. I think, you know, an umbrella for hiking obviously has its place. A German company called Göbel makes, I think, all of the existing hiking umbrellas. A lot of, let's say, companies rebrand it, but they actually manufacture it. And they came up with a new model. It's called the Swing Backpack, where the back canopy actually extends a little bit to the backside, so it also covers your pack as well. And the rain does not drip on the pack as usual. So it's quite an ingenious a way of folding and unfolding the umbrella, I found.
I thought that peak was to go over your head, not over the pack. That goes at the back, then, does it?
Yeah. Well, if you want some extra shade, if you wear just a trucker hat or something like that, maybe that can work as well. But the intent is to go extend on your back beyond your backpack, and you can have that, you know, in that normal, let's say, in various colors in a normal material, but you also have a chrome material, which, you know, is a silver coating on the outside, which reflects the sun back. And, you know, especially if you walk in a very hot environment, that might be a good source for shade and not only for protection from the rain.
Can I ask you a question? Do you find in your outdoor experience then in Germany and the areas that you walk in that many people use umbrellas? Or I have the impression that I have is that they're predominantly used in hotter climates such as Spain, the people doing the Camino or over in the US.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be my impression as well. You know, it depends. I mean, obviously, you know, usage of an umbrella stops where there's some heavy wind. and that might prevent people, you know, from using them. Let's say something like the Alps, where you usually, when you go up higher, you have a certain breeze blowing. But you know, the double duty, if you don't mind, you look a little bit special. You know, when you wear a chromed umbrella, you know, can be a good option, because it really lowers the temperature if you walk in your shade, if you take your shade with you. And that construction here I found very interesting.
Well, I've certainly spoken to Goebel myself many times, and fascinated that obviously the company is based in Germany and is probably making most of the outdoor umbrellas around the world. But I have yet to see anybody in Europe really using the umbrellas as a hiking umbrella. Although I've spoken to many people that say they're a good idea and obviously use them, particularly in the US, doing something like one of the big CDT trails.
Yeah. As I said, you know, you have your shade with you on top of the rain protection, and you know, a lot of people also use it if they, for example, to cover the entrance of their tents. You know, when it's windy and rains tend to blow into, they just open up the umbrella and put it inside of the entrance of the tent.
Well, so you came away from the show, were you sort of excited or inspired as you had been in the past at Friedrichshafen? I'm sorry I didn't really make it this year, but I got the feeling it was probably, in some realistic case, a bit more expensive to actually attend it as well.
Yeah. Well, for sure, it was a bit more expensive. I mean, as I said at the beginning, you could see it at the size of the booths of the various companies. You know, companies who have super large ones in Friedrichshafen now have, let's say, normal size anymore for various reasons, returned now that it's taking place in Munich. And in terms of, you know, this is a show, you know, that is aimed, it's a B2B show, right? It's a business to business show. So it's not aimed at the end consumer. It's aimed, you know, at the major brands connect to their dealers and they can order, you know, the gear for the next season. So that's the main aim. And obviously, you know, then you have some media people around that kind of, you know, spread the word what will be coming out. But it's not an end consumer show, and it's also not a show where, you know, let's say cottage manufacturers who tend to build lightweight equipment have a place there, right? So it's the main companies, and as I said at the beginning, you know, it seems to be that lightweight is not seen by those companies anymore as a differentiator. In previous years, you always had companies coming up, this is the lightest X, this is the lightest Y. You haven't seen that advertised at this year's show. And, you know, and what I've seen, you know, you have seen last year the Uber Light Pad from Thermarest and the Quilt, the Levity Pack I mentioned from Osprey. So no major releases of really, really lightweight is, you know, with the exception of some of the products I've talked about in the show. But it's more evolution than revolution, I would say.
I was going to say that's the feeling I had, that it is more a show that things have evolved slightly and materials have become a little bit more eco-sensitive. But what is this poor little robot doing?
Yeah, well, the aim of the robot was actually to help you finding your way. You know, you have an iPad type of or tablet kind of thing which you could press, and then that robot would awake and you can ask the robot, you know, whatever booth you want to visit, and it would show the directions. Not sure if that is the future of the industry, hopefully not. You know, it's interesting because there's always that discussion, you know, is such a fair, you know, nowadays the right ground for connecting people and, you know, demonstrating the new equipment, because what major brands tend to do now is, you know, they reach out directly, and then they have their own little fairs, you know, where they can then present their new gear to the dealers that lists them, and then they order it directly. So from that angle, they don't need the show anymore. Yeah? The question is, you know, is that networking aspect interesting enough for companies to visit, right?
Well, certainly technology is is moving forward now, and obviously we're using technology to discuss the subject and share it across the world with people. I'm sure the brands themselves will grasp the idea that it's probably cheaper to employ this type of technology, for example, to shed the story amongst their dealers and so on.
Yeah, this is one thing, you know, and you have two on top, you know, you have two major trade shows, you know, you have obviously this one here, this is aimed for the European market. And then you have one, it's called the outdoor retailer show in the USA. And that took place like, I think, 2 weeks before or even 1 week before this fair started. So all the major brands with a footprint, you know, in the US, which tend to be a lot, you know, release their new items at the OR show in Denver. So this was not news then anymore for Europe. So. We will see. Do we need two shows? Maybe not. Maybe one show is enough. I don't know.
Well, it's certainly
it will be interesting to see what the future will bring.
It's certainly an expensive hobby to cover these shows and actually visit them. So it's interesting to see where it's all going. And let's face it, to be honest, everybody's business is changing quite significantly at the moment with all the various political things that are going on, as much as the costing implications. Anyway, Rowan, I just want to say thanks very much indeed once again for covering the show for us. It's been a fascinating evening chatting to you once again and finding out what's going on with the makers and shakers in the outdoors industry. And I trust that we'll meet up once again, hopefully perhaps at next year's show, and we'll try and cover it between us.
We surely will. I'm such a gear nerd, I can't miss a show.
Okay, Rowan. All the best. Many thanks.
Thank you.
My thanks to Roman once again for visiting ISPO and checking it out on our behalf. Very thorough, very German. Hopefully next year we will both attend, and you never know, I may even try to do a live show from there too, which would A, be interesting, and B, probably be very challenging. But I'm always up for trying something a little bit different. As I say, do check out the full video interview with all the details and the pictures and the videos, etc., etc., over on the Outdoor Station website or on our YouTube channel. And also, if you have chance, please subscribe to our newsletter when you get a moment. So until next time, folks, the geeks have now left the building. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.